This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Here we go. Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Tuning in to another edition of another Dolphins podcast. Thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you're enjoying the March Madness, but have a little extra time to talk some football. We are going through everything you need to know about the 2024 wide receiver draft class. And to do that, Joshua Houts, Brian Catt, happy weekend, gentlemen.
Happy weekend. March Madness, I got to be honest, I was about to fill out a bracket and I missed by about a minute for my office pool. And that's about the extent of how much I pay attention to basketball.
I've actually watched more basketball in the last 24 hours than I might have all season. I mean, I actually filled out one for my wife, and the only game I missed yesterday was the Kentucky game, which I did a parlay and they busted. I almost won $340 and Kentucky got spoiled by Oakland. So I'm actually watching some of it. I'm enjoying it. But I enjoy football much more, and I enjoy coming on here talking about the Dolphins with you guys. So week's been good. Jake, how have you been doing this week, man?
I think that's the one March Madness gripe, is that you only have, 3 days to fill out your bracket. And as someone is procrastinate for about everything, that's not nearly enough time. So go Houston. That's why I got my bracket. But that's all the basketball talk. We are here to talk about wide receivers. And Kat, I want to start with you, because one thing I've been trying to say throughout this process is that, well, it's a very long process and some opinions are going to change. And then some people are just going to be so bored that they want to change their opinions. The craziest thing I think I've seen so far, Kat, I'd love to get your thoughts, was Chris Sims, NBC's Chris Sims, saying that Marvin Harrison Jr. is like the fifth wide receiver on his big board. So let's just start there. Where do you have Marvin Harrison Jr.? Is he any lower than two?
No, he's number one for me. I mean, you can make a point that Malik Nabers from LSU and Rome Odunze from Washington are elite prospects, and maybe you like Nabers' ability to break tackles more than Harrison, or you think Odunze may be a little bit more polished and refined than Harrison. But other than that, no, I think Marvin Harrison is a better version of AJ Green when he came out of Georgia. So, I mean, you're talking about, if he goes to the right team, might end up joining his dad in the Hall of Fame one day.
I just have to say, Chris Sims is out of his freaking mind. I mean, every year it's a quarterback ranking. This tier with his receivers, didn't he have like a gap then between the top two and between Marvin Harrison? It's like he does this to piss people off and to get those engagements, I guess. But anyone that doesn't have him number one, I would think, is a little bit crazy, because like you said, this guy could be generational, and it seems like he is a foregone conclusion at number one receiver that's going to come off the board.
Kat, are you as confident as Houts is saying that Harrison is no doubt the number one wide receiver to come off the board come draft day?
I would get about 90% of the way there, only because of how much Nabers and Odunze are being talked about. But it would be a shock at this point if Harrison wasn't number one. Now, the interesting thing to keep an eye on as draft day approaches is right now, You look at what the command. I mean, the Bears are taking Caleb Williams at number one. That's pretty much decided. Number two, you've got the Commanders, who only signed Marcus Mariota. That's all they've got on the roster. They traded Sam Howell. Number three, the Patriots, Jacoby Brissett's their starter. So you've got to think those top three teams are going quarterback. And now, does that push up J.J. McCarthy or a Michael Penix? Probably McCarthy if a quarterback were pushed up. And then does that push a Marvin Harrison down to five to the Chargers?
I was just thinking, I probably shouldn't be speaking in absolutes, because isn't he kind of foregoing the entire draft process? I don't think he's doing anything at his pro day and things like that. So obviously he's generational, probably doesn't need those things, but I guess it could be maybe not as done as I'm sitting here saying. But I do think when it's all said and done, Marvin Harrison Jr. will be that first receiver off the board.
He's got it all: size, speed, strength, football IQ. Kat, as we kind of go through the first 10 picks of this draft, wide receivers, the first position I really kind of want to talk about, because two teams in there, you got the Patriots at three, you got the Jets at 10. Do you really want to be facing Marvin Harrison Jr. two times a year for the next, 10, 15 years? I mean, that does not sound like fun. No matter, the Patriots have kind of had a weird offseason where it's a lot of just kind of bridge type players. Where would you be surprised if they kind of rode out into the sunset with Jacoby Brissett, throwing it to Marvin Harrison Jr.?
The only way I could see that changing is if there is a major trade down opportunity, and the Vikings would be that team. If so, they traded to get another first round pick here. So they've got picks 11 and 23. And if they put together a package to get up to the third pick for a quarterback, that includes those two number ones and more picks, maybe a first rounder next year, then I could see the Patriots falling back, relying on Jacoby Brissett for a year and taking the picks. That's something that could happen. But at the end of the day, I see the first three picks being to the current teams, the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots, all going quarterback.
Yeah, and I know we're sitting here talking about receivers, but I do think that this quarterback unit is, at least as prospects, as advertised, and I do think you'd be crazy, if you're the Commanders not taking Jaden Daniels. If you're the New England Patriots and Drake May falls into your lap, I mean, it seems like you have to run to the podium, but like you guys said, a team could come calling, could offer up all sorts of picks. We know the Vikings have a guy targeted in their crosshairs, so that's what's fascinating about the draft. Anything could happen, and then there's teams that we're not even talking about that could become enamored by one of these guys that you just see shoot up. I mean, I'll never forget when the Chiefs traded up and took Patrick Mahomes during that draft. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I mean, there's time and time again we've seen trades throughout history where you're just like, oh, shit, we did not see that coming. And we go on and history repeats itself. So loving this quarterback class, but also loving these receivers, and intrigued to see what Kat thinks about these guys, because everyone can sit here talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., but it's those guys after him that are truly battling for those different spots on different teams' draft boards.
Right. If you're a fan of the NFL, you don't need to use too much imagination to have an idea of what someone named Marvin Harrison Jr. can bring to the table. But Kat, tell me a little bit about Malik Nabers, what makes him special, and looking at this top five of the wide receiver class, it's kind of impressive that the LSU has two players there with Brian Thomas Jr. who could also possibly go in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, Nabers is somebody who, if he got out of the top five picks or top six picks, I'd be shocked. I mean, his ability to run after the catch and his ability to gain separation without losing any stride when he changes direction is what makes him special. And that really does fit into any offense. And as far as being able to line up all over the place, that might be where he has an edge on Marvin Harrison Jr. So I expect him to be one of the top players drafted here. And, just looking at his production at LSU this past year, he was third in the NFL or in all of college football for receptions over 20 yards. And the guy after him, Rome Odunziye, was number one. So you're talking about just elite production against the best of the best in college football. That's why you're seeing these top three guys, Harrison, Nabers, and Odunziye, as top 10 locks right now. And I don't expect that to change. Then you've got a little bit of a break, and then you've got a clear number four in Brian Thomas Jr., who also from LSU and really a late bloomer. He led the SEC in touchdown catches with 17 touchdowns on 68 catches. Then he goes to the combine and at 6'3", 209 runs a 4.33. So somebody who, for a big guy, is not that boundary type of receiver that a Keon Coleman from Florida State is. He can move, he can separate, and he can really do it from the slot and from the outside. So I expect Brian Thomas, like I said here on the show about 6 weeks ago, after the combine, I thought he was going to catapult up and to be a top 15 pick. He'll go somewhere in the first round, but I think he'll go a lot higher than people think.
Yeah, and I think what gets me so excited about this group is, I mean, you can sit here, and I think some people probably had Adunzie above Neighbors at one point, right? In the, you know, leading up to the draft, but it seems like Neighbors has pulled away. I think it just is a different time, right? There were times when the Dolphins would draft a receiver that would never, you know, ever flourish or become what they were capable of. We saw receivers, you know, previously being drafted that never lived up to that hype. It seems like now these guys come in, like you mentioned, they're going against these elite competition. They almost seem like they're ready. They're going out there, and you see some of these guys making an impact early on. So, I guess I was going to originally ask you, if you were the Miami Dolphins sitting there at 21, which one of these guys would have to fall to you to really get, you know, over the moon excited and maybe throw it aside, you know, the need at guard or center or something like that to make you turn in that card and take that wide receiver to become that wide receiver three and to groom behind Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill?
At 21, assuming the top three guys have no chance to be there, then Brian Thomas would be interesting. He would bring something different to the offense in terms of his vertical speed and his size. So he would certainly be consideration. There wouldn't be another receiver at 21 that I would look at for the Dolphins. Now, the interesting part of this is it really does put for the Dolphins the best player available versus need conversation to the test. Because when you get down into the second round, there are so many receivers in this draft. I mean, just the consensus big board that I have and I've tweeted is, you know, just a combination of seven big boards from, you know, PFF, ESPN, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got, gosh, in the top 55 overall picks, you've got 13 or 14 wide receivers. And most of them are between the 29 and the 55 range where the Dolphins pick. So there's going to be an intriguing option for the Dolphins if they still have a need at their third receiver position.
What are the odds you think that first-round pick could be used on a receiver? Brian Thomas probably would be the only one that would really – that I'd kind of be able to settle with, I think.
5%, only because it's Mike McDaniel. Otherwise, I'd say 1%. Second round, I think that increases. And, you know, really where Dolphins fans should be looking at is – that group of receivers from about 5 to 14 on the wide receiver board, because that's where it starts to really become interesting and a fascinating conversation, because most of those guys are going to go there, but there are some players who, in my opinion, are not good fits for what the Dolphins do. I mean, you've got, for example, there are three that I would not consider, not at 21, not at 55. One of them is Keon Coleman from Florida State, because, you know, 6'3", 213, he's a fantastic-looking athlete, but does not separate and does not get yards after the catch. So if you can't do those two things, how are you going to play in this offense? I think he's off the board completely. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina is fascinating because he's a one-year wonder at South Carolina. He played 5 years at South Carolina and didn't have over 170 yards in a season until this past year. And then just tore the roof off the SEC. But he's 6'1", 221, ran a 4.39, but really somebody that doesn't separate it very well. And it kind of runs like he's on stilts. You know, he's not somebody who separates all that well. So, I mean, you can't throw bubble screens to this guy and have him run in a straight line for the rest of his career. I mean, he's a project, and I don't think that's something the Dolphins are going to look at 55. Jalen Polk should go somewhere in the second or third round from Washington. But, you know, I don't see anything the Dolphins are going to point to at 55 and say, you got to have that guy. He's just a polished overall receiver, had over 1,100 yards for Washington this past year. And, you know, just a B plus in every category. I mean, I think he's going to be a fine NFL receiver, but what does he actually bring that moves the needle for the Dolphins? I don't think much at 55. So I would expect the Dolphins to pass on him there, but there are five or six receivers I think could be considerations for the Dolphins.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Yeah, it's fascinating what you say about Leggett. I'm sitting there and I'm going to joke that's the Spencer Rattler effect, but I know a lot of Dolph fans are high on that. They know that there's a little bit of a South Carolina portal there between Landon Gray or Chris Greer and company. But the name that stood out to me when I'm looking through this, and again, I've been watching the film as much as I should have. I mean, I'm going to dive into it a little bit before the draft, but the name that stood out to me, or a player that I almost see as a fit in this offense, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Roman Wilson out of Michigan.
He seems like right at.
I sniped.
Wow.
We always do this. So I had him written down as the guy with stars next to his name because I joked that, you know, Stephen Ross always has his eye on the Michigan players. I joked that today's wearing his JJ McCarthy jersey, but this truly feels like a guy that could be that perfect slot type of guy that can, you know, play inside and outside. So give me your thoughts on Roman Wilson, both of you. I guess, Jake, give me your thoughts on Roman Wilson. And then we do have to talk about the Texas wide receivers because it looked like the Dolphins brought the entire crew with them to Texas to scope out some of these dudes. So, Jake, tell me what you really liked about Roman Wilson.
So I think Kat kind of was dancing around a little bit. I don't know if the Dolphins can attack the draft, especially if they're going to take a wide receiver in one of the first two picks and take someone who's well-rounded. They need someone to have one ability, some sort of wow factor to really, really work in this offense. And to kind of look at that vision for someone like Roman Wilson, I'm just looking at his PFF blurb here because I don't have too many details. I'll let Kat fill in the rest here. But PFF just basically said in a different receiver class, Wilson would be much higher on these rankings. He not only brings NFL speed, but NFL determination at the catch point and when blocking. His tape shows a player coaches would love to have. Kind of seems like a super souped up River Craycraft in a sense, who worth noting, he just re-signed with the Dolphins as well.
Roman Wilson is a late bloomer at Michigan, and he was on my list here of those five players. Golden Tate is the name that comes to mind when I watch him.
I like that.
And he's that 5'11", stocky wide receiver who brings a lot of power to the position. He understands coverage really well. And in this type of offense where you need to be able to get to be at an exact location on the field when Tua delivers the ball, that's big. And for being his size, he can also block really well. And that's going to be important too for getting on the field too if you're a slot player. I mean, there's a reason why the Dolphins have looked for that big slot and had that big slot on the field since McDaniel got here, whether that's, you know, Mike Gesicki or Trent Sherfield or, you know, trading for Chase Claypool last year. Blocking is important if you're going to be playing in the slot a lot. So, no, I think Roman Wilson will go somewhere in the second round. And if he falls to the end of the second round with the Dolphins pick, that's probably going to be good value for somebody.
Josh, was there anyone else on your list? Or are you ready to talk about the trip to Texas the Miami Dolphins took?
Yeah, I mean, Kat, was there anybody else that really stood out to you? Because I think, you know, Xavier Worthy and Mitchell are two guys that you probably had on your list, or at least they are two guys that you probably have thoughts on. But was there anybody else that really stood out before we talk about that trip to Texas? Because it seemed like everyone was there. John Embry and company, they had the whole crew there with them in Texas.
Yeah, so of the – there are actually seven receivers that after the top four guys and throwing out the, you know, Leggett, Jalen Polk and Keon Coleman. There were seven guys that I think could be a temptation for the Dolphins in the second round. One of them, we just talked about, Roman Wilson. And then the two Texas receivers, A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy are two more on that list. We can circle back to them. Troy Franklin from Oregon is fascinating because he's one of my, I'm higher on him than most people are. I actually would make the argument he's the fifth receiver in the draft after those top four guys. And, you know, the knock on him right now is he's only 173 pounds. I mean, that's what he weighed in at the combine. He ran in the 4.4s, and then in his pro day, he actually gained about 10 pounds, but then he didn't run. So it's kind of, does that really matter? But I think he is, I think he has great hands. He's unbelievably smooth. And for somebody that is 6'2", 6'3", can get in and out of breaks unbelievably well. He's been starting since his freshman year at Oregon. And, you know, I think right now teams are getting further away from the tape with, you know, the combines and the pro days. But then closer to draft day, get a little bit closer to the tape. I think Franklin's going to start getting higher up on boards, probably end up somewhere early to mid second round. So if he fell to 55, again, a temptation there. Troy Franklin out of Oregon. Ladd McConkie out of Georgia is somebody that I can't help but look at Wes Welker and think, how could Wes Welker not be throwing tables over for the Dolphins to draft this guy if he falls to 55? I mean, I've always said if Wes Welker was a B-plus route runner in the NFL, he would have never made it in the NFL because he didn't have size. He didn't have speed. He was a perfect route runner with a perfect plan of what he was going to do before each play started. And that is Ladd McConkie to a T. So if he's available in the third round or in the second round, yeah, I mean, good luck single covering him with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle on the field too. So those are the two guys outside of the Texas receivers, Ladd McConkie and Franklin, that would be major temptations there at 55.
Yeah, I mean, I like that list. I mean, there's some other guys that I want to throw out there towards the end, but let's get into this whole Texas thing, right? Because it seemed like that was all anybody on Twitter was talking about. You mentioned A.G. Mitchell. We talked about Xavier Worthy. I don't know exactly what he ran yesterday, but the internet was just absolutely up in arms about what he's doing. You saw Mike McDaniel there. You saw Chris Greer there. Chris Greer actually looked like he was off to the side looking at somebody else. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on those guys? And then I guess maybe we need to throw Jatavion Sanders out there, right? Because it sounds like that might have been a guy the Dolphins had interest in.
Yeah, if we go back to the consensus big board here, A.D. Mitchell is 28th overall in the draft. Xavier Worthy is 42nd. And Jatavion Sanders is 44th. So they are right there in that late first, second round area. A.D. Mitchell is going to project as the better overall wide receiver in this class because, you know, he's 6'2", 205 pounds. Like Franklin, gets in and out of his breaks very, very smoothly. And then he goes to the combine and runs a 4.34 and does 11.4 broad jump. But he's somebody I'm not as high on as other people are, very simply because I feel like there's an element of aggressiveness missing in his game. You know, that can be coached up possibly, but when I watched him, I was a little frustrated because I was looking for a little bit more from him, a little more aggression, a little more tackle breaking ability, something that's kind of his trump card. And I didn't quite see that. So I'm a little bit lower on him than most people. I'd put him more in the late second, early third area. Xavier Worthy, I mean, like I said, with Wes Welker and Ladd McConkie, if you're Mike McDaniel, how could you not want Xavier Worthy on your team? First time I saw him play, I thought this guy is a Miami Dolphin if they can get their hands on him. He's 5'11", 165 pounds, and ran a 4.21, which is the fastest time in the history of the combine. And you watch him on the field and that shows up. And the difference with him is that he's not just this like John Ross, Tutu Atwell, straight up speed player. This guy caught 130 passes over the last 2 years at Texas at only 13 yards per catch. You know, that speed wasn't utilized as much. So you get him into in an NFL offense with his speed and his ability to get in and out of routes so quickly. I mean, I think it's going to be the same type of temptation as Devon Achane was last year for the Dolphins in the second round, if Worthy ends up falling to this spot in the second round for the Dolphins.
I saw the PFF compared Ladd McConkie to Eddie Royal. And Kat, I want to ask you, because I kind of think back to Jarvis Landry, looking at the way this team is built. And, you know, I've been saying the last couple of pods that I kind of want the Dolphins to go a little crazy and go offensive line with each of the first two picks. But seeing how this offense kind of whittled away at the end of last season. Does that slot receiver really move the needle? I mean, does that really seem like the best position to kind of push this offense? I think it's important to consider. We spent a year talking about how Tyreek Hill only says good things off the field and yada, yada, yada. And man, we look like doofuses after that one. So there's this crazy scenario where maybe the Dolphins are trying to rebuild the wide receiver room around Jaylen Waddle and maybe a draft pick in a year or two. But is that the best way to move the needle for a team that is kind of stuck in place with a lot of its skill set players?
No, I don't think the Dolphins should draft a receiver in the first two rounds, to be honest with you. I think there will be players that are tempting for them at 55, not so much at 21. And if they end up trading down and accumulating some more picks, you know, maybe they look at somebody in the third or fourth round. But if the Dolphins were to go into the season with what they have now, Hill, Waddle, Ezekama, River Craycraft, Braxton Berrios, maybe they could use another guy, but I think they would be fine. And you also have to factor in too, Durham Smythe and Jonnu Smith. And Jonnu Smith is basically a big slot receiver. So I think they could go in with what they have now. So more than likely, the Dolphins will not draft a receiver in the first two rounds. I would prefer that they look more at the offensive line and cornerback.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say it moved the needle. I mean, I agree with you. I think Jonnu Smith can be that take on that role. And I know Jake and I talked before about the running backs being involved. I mean, Devon Achane could still get involved. And, you know, he's not going to be your wide receiver three, but he can definitely take some more targets and more of a workload than we saw. I guess the only thing I would argue is that Barry Jackson, as we'll talk about, he's saying that the Dolphins are looking at that wide receiver three position as something they absolutely have to upgrade. So, yeah, one name I did want to ask you real quick, though, Johnny Wilson, any thoughts on him? I see 6'7". I mean, this is a guy who we talked about on another pod, a guy that's a refrigerator, basically. Do you have any thoughts on him, Kat, before we talk about this wide receiver three news?
He's massive. I mean, I don't know whether you move him to tight end and put some weight on him or you keep him on the outside, because at 6'7", with how long his reach is, man, and he runs a 4.53, but I don't pay attention to that much with him. He doesn't play to that speed. He has he runs like he's 6'7". And so I don't know where that's going to factor in the league. I mean, maybe a slightly faster version of Ronde Gadsden would be my best comparison for him. But he's a weird guy and somebody in the first two rounds of the draft, I would definitely stay away from. If he's there, fifth, sixth round, yeah, I definitely give it a shot.
One final question I got here, Kat. Fifth, sixth round, are there any late round darts that you're hoping the Dolphins can kind of go after? This way you can say, I told you so, if it does happen, you know, next month?
I'd say Malik Washington from Virginia is interesting. Somebody who had a 42.5-inch vertical leap at the combine, but more importantly, he had over 110 catches for Virginia last year. He was number four on Virginia, and 10 of his last 11 games, he had over 100 yards. I mean, this is somebody who just flat out gets open. He's a slot only type of dude. But if you're looking for somebody there in the fifth, sixth round, you're probably looking for somebody who's a little bit limited. So he's one guy. Jermaine Burton from Alabama, I was going to say, is that type of guy too, but it looks like people are starting to catch on to him, and he's looking more of like a third round type of guy instead of a fifth rounder, but he's silky smooth, great route runner, not, you know, great in one particular area. You know, he's 6 foot, 195 pounds, just really good at everything, but doesn't really stand out in one area. But if he ends up falling, you know, into that day three area, he's somebody I'll be keeping my eye on. And Luke McCaffrey from Rice. I mean, it never hurts to get a McCaffrey on your team. And, you know, somebody who was a college football quarterback and has now, you know, has seen snaps at running back, some at receiver. So he plays all over the field, but may not quite have the upside to get into the first 2 days of the draft. So if they can land one of those guys there in the fifth, sixth or seventh round, I think you're getting a steal.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Midweek or so, we learned that the Miami Dolphins were restructuring the contract of Bradley Chubb. As of Friday, the Dolphins had the ninth least cap space. Hey, they're not the last anymore. Sitting right around $10.3 million. The move included adding a 2028 $2.75 million void year to Bradley Chubb's contract. There's a way out of that contract in 2027. I cannot believe we're talking about 2027, where the Dolphins could have $20 million savings with $9 million in dead cap. Kat, it's obvious that the Dolphins were going to have to make some moves, but this is something Josh and I spoke about earlier this week. What are your thoughts on these void years that a lot of teams are trying to get trendy towards and implement on the salary cap?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before, is are the Dolphins going to pinch their pennies here in the offseason? Are they going to push it all to the middle of the table and kick the can down the road? And normally I'm somebody that doesn't like kicking the can down the road, but it's different with the Dolphins, I think, right now. I mean, you've got an owner that's going to be 84 in May and a team that hasn't won a playoff game since 2000. But more importantly, the Dolphins were 11-4 at one point last year. And that, until everything fell apart. And in 5 years, if the Dolphins go through, you know, if actually let's say 3 to 5 years, if the Dolphins go through a period where, you know, they don't have a lot of money or they've got to, you know, pay off the credit card, then I'm willing to take that risk. And I'm willing to get the, because look, if that happens, Mike McDaniel is going to be gone. And, you know, I'm not afraid of this team to be bad in 2026 and 2027. You know, the Dolphins haven't been in a position in about 20 years where they can head into a season saying we can win 11, 12, 13 games. And also in 3 to 5 years, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, unfortunately, they're all still going to be in the AFC. That's not changing. They're going to be 33, 34 years old at the time. So why not go for it now? So this is actually, these restructures are moves that I really do agree with.
There's a little bit of fear with them because I think throughout January and February, we heard that the Dolphins could somehow clear up like $60 million in cap space if they went all in and made every restructure possible. I think I've been pretty happy that the Dolphins have I don't want to say settled, but they haven't pulled every single lever that is possibly able to be pulled. They've kind of settled in here to a spot where we're going to restructure some contracts where down the road we might have to kind of bite the bullet. But for now, they can push forward without it looking too crazy. What says you, Josh?
Yeah, I was just going to say at some point we're going to have to nuke this thing and kind of almost start over. But I kind of agree with Kat here. I mean, this is, we talked about before last season, best team we've seen on paper. You know, we've seen moves this offseason that you can almost say, you know, they're replicating that. So empty the chamber now while you can if you have to kick that thing down the road. Because, I mean, one look around the world, I don't know how long I'm going to be around, right? I want to see this team win some games. This is the best roster you've had. Do whatever you can right now. And it sounds like they're trying to use every last resource of pennies they have to try to make this roster a contender and to get over that hump that we've seen for what, 20 plus years, like Kat said.
With $10 million in cap space, it was reported Friday that Odell Beckham Jr. is visiting with the Miami Dolphins. These things are always great because it's a big name. Everybody knows who OBJ is, excuse me, a three-time Pro Bowler, 2022 Super Bowl champion. I think he might have been MVP of that Super Bowl game if he did not get hurt. Kat, the Dolphins have $10 million in cap space currently. Would it be wise for them to tie the knot and sign OBJ to add to a unit that already has Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle?
No. And if you look at my Twitter page the last couple of days,
it's been great.
I think everyone knows where I stand on that. Look, I'll tell you what, I'll extend an olive branch. Okay. Odell Beckham Jr. has the one trait that is best for a wide receiver that Tua is throwing the ball to. He can separate well. He can still do that. Even if he's going into his 11th year, he can still do that. And I do think he's a good teammate. I don't think he's somebody who's a locker room cancer or anything like that. And maybe I am overthinking it a little bit. But on the other side, my understanding is that the issue with the Dolphins last year, really the last 2 years, and why they faded down the stretch is they're basically playing flag football out there. And now you add Odell Beckham at $10 million a year. I don't think they will. I think they're just reaching out to him, you know, keeping in good contact with him, seeing if something falls through the cracks there. But, you know, does that really resolve anything? Does that really make the Dolphins a better team? And you look at Beckham over the last 5 years. I mean, the miscommunications he's had with Lamar Jackson and with Baker Mayfield, you know, that was a big issue with the Dolphins last year too, was just the overall communication on the offense. So you've got somebody who's 31 years old, who played for $16 million for the Ravens last year to catch 35 passes. 24 of those were in three games. I mean, what are you really getting here out of him? And also, I think he's going to stunt the growth of a lot of other receivers on the roster too. So no, overall, I definitely go away from it. If something happens to Hill or Waddle, it becomes a different conversation and becomes maybe a little bit more worth it. But overall, it's absolutely not for me.
When I first heard about it, I had to sit there and you had to make sure it was a real account, right? You had to make sure you weren't just being hoodwinked by someone on Twitter. Dolphins had interest in OBJ. You know, this is that guy they want as their wide receiver three. My original or first thought is, I mean, at one point I had the tweet, right? At one point we all wanted Odell Beckham Jr. on your favorite team. People have told me that I'm wrong, that there are people that didn't apparently want him at some point, but I did at some point. He's now 31 years old. Everyone can say here and admit that this dude is better days are behind him. But I guess the way I look at it is if this is what Mike McDaniel wants, I mean, we joked about him building his ultimate team. If this is that piece to the ultimate team that he wants, a guy that can move around like Odell Beckham, he thinks that that's the right fit. I would be all for it. It would just come down to the money for me because like Kat said, he made $16 million last year. I'm not giving Odell Beckham Jr. that. I mean, I know I always say it's not my money, but I feel like the Dolphins have plenty of other needs or areas where they could address with that type of cash. We do have to mention how Xavier Howard's money does come eventually come off the books, what, June 1st. So maybe this is something they're looking to do down the road. But I thought it was absolutely a joke at first that the Dolphins had interest in him. They brought him in for a visit, right? So it seems like it's a little bit serious. But hearing Barry Jackson come out and basically say that Mike McDaniel and them, this was who they envisioned as that wide receiver three, took me by surprise. And it just makes you wonder, what are they going to do, right? You said it, Kat. They're playing flag football out there. The biggest thing is they are abandoning the run in times when they should be, you know, pounding that thing, getting some of their other playmakers involved. Adding Odell Beckham Jr., that's just another mouth to feed. Would it lead to an issue down the road? That's to be determined. But as me being Hal, it's a fantasy guy who once won a championship because of Odell Beckham Jr., sign me up for it. But I think we can all admit his better days are behind him.
So when this first happened, I had the face of someone who spent way too much time hanging around people who ate way too much on St. Patrick's Day. I had the complete stank face of absolutely not. But then I got to thinking of what the Miami Dolphins truly need. And there's two things, as Josh and I think we've all spoken about this. They need two different things in a wide receiver three. And one of them isn't completely reachable. And that's the concept of if Tyreek Hill, if Jaylen Waddle, one of those guys goes down, you need to be able to trust someone to have six, seven, eight targets in a game. They could not do that with Cedric Wilson. And I didn't really know if OBJ could be that player because he played 92% of offensive snaps in week one. He never went above 60% the rest of the season. Most of the time he was in the 50s or 40s. Now you could say that Baltimore is going to run one of the more unique offenses, especially with Lamar Jackson. And that's true. And I'm also willing to give Mike McDaniel the benefit of the doubt. I do see a player though, where he could kind of fill both these needs. One, he averaged 16 yards per reception last year, where I think that kind of fits into that. We're going to go and we're going to attack the open space. There were some scenarios here where I see the Miami Dolphins, for instance, he was only targeted one time. He brought it in for a 33-yard reception. Game against the Cleveland Browns, he had one reception. It was 40-yard touchdown. There are also, I think, 3-4 games here that are pretty exciting where if, you know, oh no, Tyreek Hill's limping. Oh no, Jaylen Waddle can't play this 1 week. Something like that. Can OBJ have a bigger workload? I instantly saw he was targeted 10 times against the Rams. It was kind of ugly. He only caught 4 of those receptions, but he did get 97 yards and a touchdown. However, I also saw performances where, against the Cincinnati Bengals, 7 targets, 4 receptions, 116 yards. You're not going to get OBJ to be a stud every single week, and the Dolphins don't necessarily need that. If the price isn't crazy, though, I do think he could be that guy. If you got to call his number to be an absolute stud 2-3 times a year, he could do that just if there are some injuries. But I do think there's a specific need this receiving game requires, and that's still more of a Jonnu Smith or maybe a Devon Achane role. But for what the Dolphins have and like a safety blanket of what the talent can bring to the table, I do think OBJ could work.
I think there is a pathway where Odell Beckham could come into the Dolphins and be productive. I mean, he's a talented guy. There's no doubt about that. You know, when I look at the totality of it, just like you said, Jake, I mean, yeah, he can 2 or 3 games out of the year really show those old flashes. But, you know, I can't ignore either that in the last 5 games of last year, he had 94 yards and combined in those 5 games and was a complete afterthought when it absolutely mattered the most. So he's going to be a year older, and wide receiver, tight end, running back, these are selfish man's positions. I mean, you've got, and now the mouths you have to feed. You've got Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle, then you add Beckham Jr., Jonnu Smith making $5 million a year, Durham Smythe making $5 million a year, Ingold $5 million a year, Achane at running back, Raheem Mostert at running back. You've got 8 guys you got to get on the field now and keep happy. And I prefer that third receiver spot be a position where players are trying to constantly step into and prove themselves in, not just let's just put Odell Beckham out there, be done with it, and then the younger guys behind him, let's just keep them off the field. I'm not for that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think I'm sitting here thinking we're talking about these prospects. I mean, I would love to have one of these shiny new toys, but I guess the argument I guess maybe the Dolphins would make, and I'm sitting here listening to you say that, is we're sitting here about talking about emptying the chamber. If you're emptying the chamber, bringing in Odell Beckham Jr., if you have that capital and you think, I mean, you're Mike McDaniel, you're sitting here devising this offense, you know, designing these different things. I mean, we saw those motions that he brought out last season, those little, I think they call them sharp motions or whatever they are, but you're now sitting here saying that you're going to try to take this deep offense to the next level by adding Jonnu Smith, by bringing in Odell Beckham Jr., who you believe, you know, based on reports, is that guy you want in that spot. I mean, I wouldn't be against it, but I think I'm with you. It just takes up it stunts the growth of maybe a younger player, and it might prevent the Dolphins from drafting someone. But at the same time, bringing in Odell Beckham should not stop you from drafting one of those guys if you do love him, because, you know, you got to lock up Jaylen Waddle long-term. Tyreek Hill every other week seems like he could be getting in trouble or wants to retire. Eventually we'll have another need for a receiver. So I guess I'm here for it. I'm here for the Odell Beckham thing, because it's not my money. Just don't want to pay him too much. What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, that's kind of been the big key here, right? Is you don't want to spend too much money on simply a wide receiver three. Especially consider, I think Miami targets the wide receiver three fewer than any other position in the NFL or any other team in the NFL. And then you consider they barely target their tight ends. It is a big ask. Kat, I wanted to ask you, you see that they added Anthony Brewer, they added Isaiah Wynn back on a one-year deal. Otherwise, are you surprised? I mean, I think our big attack plan for this offseason was offensive line. Everything the Dolphins can do to improve that unit, they must be doing it. Are you surprised they've been avoiding that so far, or do you think it's because it's going to be maybe some pricey draft picks going towards that unit?
No, I'm not surprised because there's not a lot they can do about it. I mean, the time to re-sign Robert Hunt was last year, and the Dolphins didn't do it. Robert Hunt's going to make almost $28 million in his first year with the Panthers. Connor Williams, there's real questions about whether or not he's even going to be back this year. So that's not an option. And then once you get past that, there just wasn't a lot out there. I mean, if you go and you try to sign Kevin Zeitler, for example, who is, the third best guard out there in free agency, you're probably going to lose your third round comp pick for next year. So, no, I'm not surprised. I think getting Isaiah Wynn back was a really good move. I know it's something we've talked about here on a one-year deal, and just go out there and be a middle of the pack left guard. If you can do that, you're going to afford to over 3 seconds to throw the ball from snap to snap. So, I wonder if the strategy is, from Mike McDaniel, look, in this type of offense, we don't necessarily need great offensive linemen. We just need them to do their job and be a good fit. But then again, you look at the draft, and just like a wide receiver, I mean, you've got 13 of the top 54 players are offensive linemen on this consensus big board. So it's a very offensive lineman, wide receiver heavy draft. The question is, do the Dolphins feel good with what they have after signing Aaron Brewer to start at center and feel that they can just kind of plug in the other guard spots?
Definitely feels like they're just throwing bodies there. You didn't mention him, but Jack Driscoll, do you have any thoughts on him? I was actually cutting up his game versus the Buffalo Bills. He's playing right tackle. I'm sitting there doing this. I'm like, why are you wasting time when this dude's probably playing guard if he plays? So what were your thoughts on that? Because I came right after the Isaiah Wynn signing, I think. And to me, it almost – I think Omar Kelly tweeted it, and now it's just stuck in my head. But it almost felt Kendall Lamb-ish, right? He has some experience at tackle. He can play guard. And he might really compete for one of those starting jobs. So what are your thoughts on that before we wrap this guy up?
I liked him coming out of Auburn more than I do now. He went in the fourth round of the Eagles. I thought he was going to go a little higher. He's versatile. He's not a great athlete. He's 6'5", 310. He has played four of the five offensive line spots and has said that he's played center in practice. So as a versatile player who can be active on game day, you hope he's passable. As far as being strictly a tackle, I wish, I prefer Kendall Lamb because he showed he can do it last year, where Jack Driscoll hasn't shown that he's anything more than a below average player. So I'm fine with it for what they paid for him. And he is versatile. So he has a good shot to make the team.
Awesome. Awesome. Guys, you have said it all. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of Another Dolphins Podcast. Like I said at the top, I hope everyone is having a blast watching March Madness, but you're still able to squeeze a little football news in. We will talk to you soon. But until then,
what's up?